This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and Alex Knight.
Hey everyone. For those who don't know, the president of Nintendo, Satoru Iwata, passed away this weekend. So we thought that we would take some time to talk about his career, his accomplishments, and what he's given to the gaming industry. Obviously, Satoru Iwata was the first president of Nintendo not part of the founding family, which was a big deal at the time. But before that, he had a very distinguished career as a programmer within Nintendo. He was actually on the original Super Smash Bros. Team with Sakurai. And they, between them, did quite a lot of the coding for it. He also worked at... Well, he got his start at HAL Laboratory. It's a Smash Bros. But before that, Kirby, he practically single-handedly coded Earthbound, the original one. The story goes the code was incredibly badly written, and he just sat there and rewrote the entire game from scratch by himself.
And having programming experience is something that is pretty rare, not just in Japan, and but in North America as well, for anyone in that kind of high-level CEO position. I mean, it's a huge... It gave him an edge.
Yeah, it's huge. And not only that, but there was an interview where they asked... I think it might have been one of the Ask Iwata featurettes that they did from time to time before he started doing the Nintendo Direct videos. And they asked him, well, you wanted to do programming at a time when nobody really knew what this was, and like playing with computers seemed dumb. And he said he knew it was going to be something really important. And he told his dad what he intended to do, and his father didn't speak to him for about a year, but he pressed on because he knew it would be really special.
Right, and I was just thinking we should maybe try to go in chronological order in terms of, like, you know, so let's start at his early days. So he worked at as a programmer at HAL Laboratory, right? And he developed, he worked on multiple titles, but Super Smash Bros., Kirby, and the Pokemon series before joining Nintendo in 2000. So I guess he was really cutting code at a young age. It wasn't like he just was sort of put into the seat of an executive position. He really worked his way up, and that's extremely difficult to do.
Yeah, and what's more impressive is that it was such a short time as well. He started working at HAL Laboratory in 1983, and he became the president of HAL Laboratory in 1993. So 10 years, and he was already the president of that company. And then he joined Nintendo only 7 years later, in 2000. And then he became president in 2002 of Nintendo. So it was just kind of a meteoric rise, but even while that was happening, he was still fiercely programming things. Actually, before I get to that part, one of his other notable achievements was in 1999, when they were developing Pokemon Stadium. Iwata actually ported the battle logic from Pokemon Red and Green to Nintendo 64 without any documentation, without any real information as to how any of it worked. And Pokemon, to this day, is still one of the most complicated battle systems in the game industry. Like, you've got types, IVs, all of that stuff that goes on in the background that only the most hardcore Pokemon players know about. And he managed to port it all. And this was basically his first time looking at it. And he ported the whole thing in a week.
Right. And there wasn't too much information I could find about when he was working at HAL in terms of, I'm just reading the Wikipedia page here, because it just kind of talks about he was put in the position of president of HAL Laboratories to turn them around because they were on the verge of bankruptcy. But there's a chunk of detail that is missing here. Maybe you can speak to that if you're aware of it. But do you know what he did in terms of specifics for HAL Laboratory to turn that company around?
Well, I think a large part of it was that HAL Laboratory effectively became a second party developer for Nintendo. They kind of are Nintendo at this point. Like, they are and they aren't. It's kind of like how BioWare is part of EA. Like, EA owns them, but they're still their own studio, technically. Like, it was that kind of a deal, and I think Iwata probably spearheaded that. Even when they were their own company, they exclusively developed for Nintendo consoles. But then it kind of became official after that because they were a Nintendo studio effectively. Kind of like what happened with Retro Studios, creators of the Metroid Prime series. Though I think they've either branched off or a bunch of their developers left to create their own studio. Because a lot of those guys right now are working on this interesting looking RPG for the Xbox One. The one with that girl and there's a bunch of robots, and she can take their sparks and put them into other shells or something. It looks really intriguing. But anyway, yeah, I think he essentially spearheaded the business deal that brought HAL and Nintendo together, and that probably created some sort of momentum towards him becoming president of Nintendo.
Right. And when he was hired at Nintendo, information that I have is that he continued to serve as a consultant at HAL for a while. So he was kind of, he must have been stretched pretty thin. It's quite amazing that he was able to pull off what he was able to pull off at Nintendo at that crucial moment. I mean, this is before the Wii launch, right? And Nintendo, I mean, we think Nintendo, of course, we like to poke fun at Nintendo today, you know, and talk about the struggles and the issues that they have with their hardware and software platforms and whatnot. But if you look back at that period before the Wii, they were in a much more difficult position back then.
Yeah. The GameCube was doing really badly. Initially, it started out well, but then the third-party developers basically fled for the Xbox and the PS2. And then Nintendo basically just had their first-party titles.
Right. Now, of course, one of the major issues with... I know it's a common thread with a lot of Nintendo hardware that the GameCube was severely underpowered. I think famously, one of the most underpowered consoles. But that wasn't the only issue that they had. From Iwata's perspective, it seems like he wanted to take the company in the direction of games that appealed to a wider range of audience. He felt that the games that they were producing at the time were perhaps excluding a lot of people, which means obviously lost revenue opportunity, right?
Yeah, he really spearheaded the whole Blue Ocean strategy. The idea that if they embraced more than just the core gamer, they could expand their revenue and find a wider audience, and it paid off big time, for a time, anyway.
Right, and with the conception of the Wii, he was a big proponent of the motion control system for that.
Yeah, he was.
And of course, I mean, let alone the standard home console market, but their whole the revitalization of the handheld console stuff as well was a big part of what he did with the Nintendo DS, as far as I know.
Yep, he oversaw the release of the DS and all of its successors.
And that must have been a really hard transition, because transitioning from something like the Game Boy, which was so limited in terms of what not only the hardware itself, but what you could do with it as a game developer to make a platform where, you know, they kind of had to cut their losses with the Game Boy and start over and develop this new piece of hardware that had far greater capabilities. You know, the screen was just like night and day. It was a massive transition, and obviously opened the door now. You know, in hindsight, we can see now, like, the changes that they made now open the door to all these amazing games. And obviously, the Nintendo DS today has a fantastic library of games. But, I mean, it really all started with the work that they did on the DS that Iwata was clearly involved with.
They really turned it around. The release of the Wii was just a massive smash hit. Like, it far exceeded anyone's expectation of what Nintendo could accomplish. That year, the Wii was basically the Tickle Me Elmo.
And by the way, it's not something I hear often, but apparently the stock price of Nintendo doubled at that time with the success of the Wii. And this is back in 2006. I don't know how the stock has done since then, but that was a big deal. And my observation was at the time that the Wii was released, I remember a lot of people that weren't gamers were actually talking about it, and like even my parents were considering getting one. The fact that they just broadened the entire audience of the games that they were making and marketing to, like the whole push for fitness games on that platform was a big deal with the motion control things. I mean, even David Letterman, famously with the Wii and stuff like that, playing Wii tennis on a show. I mean, that's a huge deal to make something that typically has been not even on the radar of the average person that doesn't consider themselves a gamer. That was a huge turning point.
Yeah. I mean, Wii Fit, Wii Sports, it went crazy. Of course, as it went on, you had kind of the birth of smartphones and tablets. You had the indie game market, and that kind of blew up to the point where most people, like the very audience that Nintendo was trying to capture, they kind of moved on and started playing Candy Crush on their phones. I don't think it's something you could have anticipated at the time, how that would blow up, but I think where they've gotten in trouble now is that they didn't turn quickly enough with it.
Right, and I'm just thinking one of the last things that I know he pushed, which was the whole expansion into mobile game territory. Mobile meaning smartphones, which is a big deal for Nintendo. And of course, that remains to be seen whether or not that's going to pan out. In fact, we may not see the fruits of their labor for, you know, a couple of years. But the fact that they are willing to do that, it's definitely a good sign, I think. They're willing to expand into that territory. But I'm still skeptical whether or not that's going to be even the right thing, because I'm not 100% confident that that's really the only issue, because I know there's still a huge market for consoles. You know, just look at Sony and stuff like that. The PS4 has been selling very well. People are clearly still wanting to buy these consoles. They want, you know, in-depth storytelling and gameplay, and they are willing to shell out $30, $40, $50, $60 for games. So I think there's a lot of value to that, but there are a lot of other issues involved with Nintendo, obviously, other than not just marketing, but I mean, you know, inconsistencies, a lot of little inconsistencies that are unfortunately now starting to pile up and bite them in the rear end. From a hardware and software perspective, there's not a lot of cohesiveness that I see. There's so many issues which have been argued to death. I'm sure plenty of other podcasts and lots of people have written in depth pieces about what Nintendo needs to do, but you know, I haven't seen any significant signs that they're planning to overhaul a lot of the things in their software, especially the eShop and the way digital downloads are handled on devices.
I think a lot of that is probably going to be resolved with whatever Nintendo's working on with Dana and the NX. I think E3 next year is going to be huge for that. Honestly, Nintendo's never really been about features or things like that. For them, the first and most important thing is it fun? I think the one person at Nintendo that most embodied that, next to Miyamoto, was Iwata. He made a lot of the games that got the current generation of game developers where they are. A lot of people, their childhoods were happy because of something he made.
You know, it's interesting, when I heard the news on Twitter, it became a trending topic, and I can just see from the general responses that he meant, you know, just as an individual, what he's contributed to the industry, he seems to have meant a lot to Nintendo fans in general. And it got me thinking that, you know, when is the last time somebody in a kind of position like that, a CEO of a big company, when was the last time that anyone really cared that much. And to me, the only other person I can think of is Steve Jobs. I mean, obviously he's not Steve Jobs. He's a very different person. But it sort of like his death echoes like a lot of the same kinds of reactions that people had with Steve Jobs. And he meant a lot to a lot of people. Well, even just look at the competitors too. I mean, where would Sony be today? Where would Microsoft be today without Nintendo? I mean, Nintendo is the company that started this all. They started, I mean, they weren't the first to market with a gaming console, but I mean, let's face it, I mean, anything that came before, it doesn't matter. Like, the Atari consoles didn't matter. Nintendo was the company that set that entire industry on the trajectory that it needed to be on in order for the industry to get to where it is today. So basically, Sony and Microsoft and everybody else really owes their current business to Nintendo. And I noticed that even like companies like, you know, Sony and stuff like that had something to say about him. So he's had an impact on everybody, regardless whether or not, you know, friend or foe.
Well, yeah. I mean, even if you're the head of Sony or Microsoft, you've played Kirby. You've played Mario. You've probably even played Earthbound. I mean, okay, that one's a bit more obscure, and we're still waiting on various iterations of the game to be translated into English. He's made a lot of games that have been near and dear to many people, regardless of where they are now. Not only that, even as CEO, he really tried to be close to the community between all of his cameos in various games. Even now, if you get Tomodachi Life for 3DS, his Mi is still in there. At least a part of him lives on.
I had no idea. I'm sure more of that will get included in future games now that he's gone.
Oh, I'm almost certain of it. He made sure he was directly in front for everyone to see. He really stood for Nintendo. A lot of people have said he was Nintendo, and I really feel like that was true. He cared so much about all of the values that Nintendo tries to uphold. He wanted to make games that everyone could enjoy. And I mean, even when he was president, he still managed to get some programming in every so often. For the release of Super Smash Bros. Melee, he actually was at HAL Labs doing QA and fixing bugs right there in the trenches with the other developers. So, I mean, that's him at his best. Even though he was a president, even though he was running the entire company, all he really wanted to do was sit down and make sure that everyone would enjoy the game.
How do you think things will turn out now that he's gone? I mean, I don't have any idea if they announced a successor.
They have not. Currently, Nintendo will be co-run by Miyamoto and someone else. I forget who. They'll basically be looking after things until they can appoint a permanent CEO. Ultimately, I think all of the things he's set in motion will continue. The mobile venture, the work with Dana, the release of the NX, that's all still coming. At the very least, it's going to be fun.
Sure, and of course they have future products in the pipeline that have been in development for years, so it's not like they have nothing to announce in the next year. And like you said, there's a new console coming, so we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I don't expect there to be any successor that could ever come close to him, but I just hope, you know, just like Apple, I just hope that now that he's gone, like, I hope the spirit remains alive, everything that he stood for and believed in. I hope that remains, and I hope that there's enough of the, you know, in the corporate culture and DNA of, you know, what he was able to cultivate. I just hope that that is something that will be taught somehow to future employees, that they will keep that alive. And I think as long as they can do that, they'll continue to be successful. They'll continue to remain around.
Honestly, I could see Sakurai becoming the next president. He's hinted that he doesn't really want to work on Smash Brothers anymore, even though that's probably going to keep going forever. I'd say next to Iwata, he's probably the guy that really cares. Like, obviously Miyamoto does.
What was his name?
Masahiro Sakurai, the director for Smash Brothers.
Okay, I don't know who he is.
He basically created Smash Brothers and has worked on every single one of them, often putting many hours into them. particularly the latest game for Wii U. Out of it, anyone there, I think he's probably the best choice. I'm not sure what business experience he has exactly, but he's directed games, he's certainly managed a lot of people before, and he has all of the qualities that Iwata had. Miyamoto, I think he's kind of the Johnny Ive of Nintendo. Like, if we want to go through with that Apple metaphor, Miyamoto is pretty much the Johnny Ive. Like, he's the guy that comes up with all the crazy new ideas, and he's like the creative heart of Nintendo, more or less. So for him to be CEO you would kind of lose that spark, I think. Sakurai's probably the best choice, I would think. They could always give it to Reggie.
I kind of like him. He's kind of goofy. I don't know. I find it hard not to like that guy. He seems likable. He seems like he genuinely cares about the company. I mean, he's obviously a gamer himself, right? So I think what they did with the Nintendo World Championship, bringing that back, I think that's, yeah, there's not much else I can honestly say, because, I mean, what else is there? Iwata did so much at that company, so, man, it's just like an end of an era. It's just, he was such a unique personality. But I gotta say, Michael, as an aside, clearly I don't know what I'm missing, I guess, with the current Nintendo stuff, like the Wii U. And I've been on and off thinking, like, should I get one? Should I not get one? I don't know, like, why? I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, why? I'm not interested in Nintendo hardware lately. Just not. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm kind of a snob, and I'm so focused on cutting edge graphics, and that's why I bought a PS4. And I'm just like, none of the games just seem, they all seem so goofy and like for kids to me. Like, I just,
oh no no no, they Smash Brothers is amazing. And Splatoon, I and many other people have been unable to stop playing it. It is that good.
I almost bought one just because of Splatoon, because I've seen people play it and people talk about it, and it does look fun.
And they keep adding new maps and new game modes. Like, just the other week, it was like, oh hey, here's this new game mode where you have to fight towards this like you're on moving platforms and they go towards this thing and you have to knock each other off with paint, and it's like, whoa. Not only did they release an amazing multiplayer game that doesn't have chat, which I think was probably a great move. Lots of people will disagree.
A lot of people see it as a benefit as well,
but
because
yeah,
of harassment.
Yeah, you don't hear trash talk, you don't hear swearing, you don't hear insults. It's that kind of beautiful social engineering that makes sure everyone has fun no matter what. Just like the way Hearthstone doesn't have chat, you can only use canned responses.
I never played that. Why do people play this game?
Well, that's its own kind of fun. It's kind of like every silly trading card game you played as a kid, if you did play one.
I did, for a brief period. Played Magic the Gathering for a while.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of like that. The appeal is it's less complicated, so it's easier to get into.
Well, that would be good, because Magic the Gathering is the opposite of easy. I want to go back to new Nintendo hardware for just a moment. I haven't really been following the news, and I imagine you probably know more about it than I do. Based on what you know, and I guess what you kind of are hoping to see, what do you want to see in a next generation Nintendo console?
Well, based on what has been hinted at, and based on kind of where Nintendo's strengths lie and where their weaknesses lie, and a whole bunch of other Kremlinology, magic, theory, crafting, I think the NX is probably going to be a handheld console and a TV console at the same time. So,
is this going to be anything like the, I'm just thinking with the Wii U right now, with that stupid, weird tablet sort of like hybrid.
Right. So the Wii U, I think, is kind of the start of the idea that they're getting to with the NX, and that is that people like handheld things, obviously. The 3DS is selling like hotcakes. All of their good games are released on 3DS. All of their crazy major blockbuster titles have been 3DS for the past 3 years, maybe. Like, A Link Between Worlds, and obviously the new Pokemon games every time. So well done every time. It's the same game every time, but we still buy them because they're just so goddamn fun. and you have to catch them all.
So you think the next console is going to be more of sort of what we have now with the tablet controller thing, but better.
But not. I think it's... Okay, so think about a new 3DS that's way more powerful than the handheld consoles Nintendo makes have ever been. And then combine that with a Bluetooth connection to a box that's plugged into your TV that allows you to amp up the graphics even further. Or maybe not Bluetooth, you literally plug the handheld into the set-top box and it acts as an external video card, basically. Like additional processing.
Okay, so what, like a dock or something with built-in processing? Like just like this little tiny little sort of Apple TV like slim little box that has a processor and a GPU.
Yeah, and if they really wanted to get cute, they would make it kind of like the Super Nintendo, where you actually slot it in like a cartridge.
So kind of like the PlayStation TV box, but not crappy.
That's what I'm thinking. So, like, you're sitting there, you're playing the new Zelda game. It's beautiful. It's running on Unreal Engine 4 or whatever the hell it can run. Probably Unreal Engine 4, given the amount of time that's passed and the specs it'll probably have. At this point, the hardware's cheap enough that they could probably turn out a new console next year that's effectively as powerful as the PS4 or the Xbox One. So, they do that. You've got this new Zelda game, it's running a new engine that's basically Unreal Engine 4, looks beautiful, everything's amazing. Then, oh, I have that thing I need to go to. Pause the game, unplug the handheld, open it up. It's still there, running at reduced graphical power. That amazing, beautiful console game is still there as a handheld game. The controls change a bit, you suddenly have a touch screen that you can use for the inventory system. Whatever, but you can take it with you. And when you come back, you plug it in, suddenly it's back on the TV, graphics upgrade. Basically a GameCube controller / Wii U Pro controller kind of thing as the main controller for the system. So back to basics, because everybody loves that controller format. But then you can probably also optionally connect a Wii controller and a nunchuck for motion games, things like that. So just kind of this ultimate final fusion of everything that makes Nintendo awesome. It's a 3DS, it's a GameCube, it's everything and nothing at the same time. It's whatever you want it to be.
It sounds exciting, but I'm just thinking about backwards compatibility. I wonder if they would even care, or would it maybe not even be feasible to do something like that?
Well, in order to do backwards compatibility, they would have to maintain the same PowerPC architecture, which could get tricky.
And that might be something they want to depart from.
Yeah, so my thought is it'll be x86 like the PS4 and the Xbox One, but they're going to probably do something similar to Sony. They're going to amp up their virtual console that they already have on the eShop. And, I mean, like, we've had emulators for all the Nintendo consoles for years. Like, there's Dolphin for the GameCube. There's one for the N64. There's a ton for all the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, all the Game Boys. So, I mean, they could easily make their own that works way better and add that in. Or they could go the Sony route and add streaming.
I'm glad you brought that point up about streaming, because that was going to be something I was going to suggest. It just seems kind of inevitable that everybody has to eventually at some point move towards supporting that. You know, and Sony seems to keep investing in that area, although obviously the install base or the customer base for that is tiny right now, but they've laid the groundwork by buying another company that had the infrastructure in place. You know, it remains to be seen if Nintendo would do something like that or if they would just build it from scratch, but it just seems like the next logical choice. Like, forget trying to do emulation on the device. That's costly. That's not exactly something that you would want to do. You wouldn't want to burden the console with that, so why not just do a streaming service? Just make the console a thin client that just downloads the pieces it needs.
Yeah, and I mean, that could be where Dana comes in, because their wheelhouse is around building online services. specifically for mobile gaming. So, I mean, they know how to scale connections. They know how to build a network that won't falter when millions of people are trying to play a free-to-play game or whatever.
Remind me, just for a moment, who Dena is again? Because I've heard that name, and you've mentioned it before.
So, they're a fairly major mobile gaming company. They've made a ton of free-to-play games, most of which you might not have heard of, but they're particularly famous for their integrated gaming platform that ties all of their games together. They basically made their own game center, and it's called Mobbage. And as far as I know, it works fairly well, and they have a ton of users. Here's a bunch of their games. So, Rage of Bahamut, Marvel War of Heroes. They've done a lot of licensed games, actually. G.I. Joe Battleground, Star Wars Galactic Defense, Cupcake Carnival.
Okay, so they have pedigree.
And then it's all tied together through their mobile platform. And they have 30 million users all playing on smartphones. So that's a lot of potential concurrent users. So that's kind of their expertise. So it would be well suited if Nintendo wanted to go that route. And then, yeah, like I said, virtual console, it could actually be a literal virtual console. They could even do like a Netflix type thing. Imagine Nintendo gets up on that stage and is like, you can play every Nintendo game you ever played for this much a month. The wallets would just spontaneously implode. Everyone would buy it.
Right, and it would be better. I mean, because I'm into retro gaming too, and I like my old consoles. I like my Genesis and Sega CD and my NES and all that, but you know, let's face it, I mean, playing on 30-year-old hardware is not that fantastic because, you know, it's so much more difficult to play games where you have no save points. There's no onboard storage to save your game, right? So something like having a modern console like that where maybe you get the best of both worlds, you get to play these old games, but you can actually store data on the console. Or store it in the cloud, even better. You know, it actually reminds me of what, I don't know if you're familiar with the Hyperkin console that plays like cartridges from multiple consoles. It's like an all-in-one box that has, you can play like, it's got a slot for Genesis and NES and SNES, and it's got a slot for a Game Boy cartridge, and it has an HDMI port, and it runs emulation, but it allows you, it's the best of both worlds. It runs really fast, and it allows you to, you can optionally use their own wireless controllers, or you can actually plug in an original NES or Genesis controller into it and play it. It's really brilliant, and it allows you to save, it's got a built-in hard drive, so it allows you to save the state of your game onto the console, even if the original game didn't support it. So it's pretty awesome that way. So there was a market to solve that problem. So if Nintendo just solved it, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would pay a subscription service to play these older games.
Oh yeah, like the entire Nintendo back catalog? I couldn't even imagine that. Like,
there go your weekends.
Yeah, like that's my entire childhood, basically. The Nintendo back catalog. Like all of those old Pokemon games, Pokemon Stadium, Pokemon Snap. Oh my god, if you only knew the time I spent playing Pokemon Snap. Yeah.
I have never played a single Pokemon game. I'm not sure I should.
Probably not.
For fear of losing my life.
Yeah, it's a bad idea. Learn from my example. Who knows if that's actually what it is, but given all of the vague information we have about it, it seems likely, just based on the fact that the new 3DS is literally just a minor spec bump and a minor hardware improvement. And they usually only do that towards the end of a cycle when a new console is coming. So the fact that they did that for the 3DS, but they've only announced one new console, seems like a hint to me.
You know, I get so sad every time I think of all the squandered opportunities by Sony to market the Vita, but they've done... like, Nintendo's just kicking ass. They've been kicking ass for years in the handheld gaming console market, and Sony's continuing... It's a joke.
At this point, it almost seems like they're happy to sweep it under the rug, you know? It's like, I think they had, what, one Vita game at E3 this year?
Yeah, and that was actually just a cross-buy game.
Like,
it's a really a PS4 game that, oh, we threw in the Vita version port just for you.
Oh, boy.
It sucks because it's not a bad console, and there are plenty of awesome games. There are plenty of awesome things about that console. They just need to spend the money to continue to push the developers and get people to actually buy that product. I mean, it hasn't sold badly, but I mean, it's not a huge moneymaker for them. But this is all about Nintendo today. And did you have any other closing thoughts about Mr. Iwata's passing?
You wouldn't want anyone to be sad. I think the best way we can celebrate his life is to play the games he created and have fun.
Indeed. That actually reminds me, I probably should, you know, it's a shame. I have an NES sitting here in my living room, and I bought a copy of Super Mario Bros. 2. In the box, and I haven't played it. I've never actually played it.
Oh, God.
I should probably do that.
Yeah, and then play all the Kirby games.
You know, I'm not a real gamer until I played a Mario game.
Oh, you know what? If you've played any game, you're a gamer. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, the Solitaire count?
Yes, even Solitaire.
What about Spider?
I don't know what that is, but yes.
Well, that's another card game.
Yes, that too.
Well, on that note, before this show starts to completely unravel at the seams...
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time, and have fun.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Impromptu. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a rating on iTunes and let your friends know about us. Detailed show notes for each episode are available on our website at theimpromptu.net. You can follow the show on Twitter at TheImpromptu, as well as our hosts individually at Zen Impulse for Michael Norton and at Zero Distraction for Alex Knight. As we are entirely listener supported, you can donate to us at TheImpromptu.net/donate. All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth as well as equipment upgrades to uphold the highest level of audio quality you've come to expect. We really do appreciate your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time.